Jemba, so the background of this series, as I understand, is practices in the integral yoga, and the subject for today is the tapasya of love. Yoga is union with the divine, our own origin with the source. But this union can be looked at in two ways. One is that the soul that has descended here into the nature of ignorance comes out of this ignorance and unites with its source. It has come from the divine and goes back to the divine. This is the traditional view of the matter. But then the whole cycle of entry, the whole process of rebirth, the danger, the difficulty, the charm, the delight, if it is to go back just the same as it entered, then it becomes a purposeless exercise. So Aurobindo brings this new sense and meaning to this whole journey, that when it goes back, it doesn't go back empty-handed. It goes back carrying nature also along on the path. So not only the soul realizes its own divinity, becomes one with the divine, becomes a portion of the divine, but also nature, which is here fallen, is restored to its own origin, which is the divine's own nature. So basically, conceptually, it means that the divine is not just as the pure existence, but he is also consciousness, force, bliss, and all that we see here struggling under the shadows of ignorance owes its origin to the divine. So it's not just the soul returning back to the source, leaving nature as it is, because then it will be a most not only meaningless, the whole thing will be a very futile journey. But in the process, soul is like the hook which can very easily connect to the divine, and it carries nature along through the process of life after life, till it reaches a point where not only soul realizes its divinity, but nature can also and does realize its own divine origin, its own divine power. So that's how this human nature changes into the divine supernature. This is already hinted in the Gita, but Sri Aurobindo takes it to its fullest possible scope. Because as nature lifts towards supernature, a great difficulty is that even if nature identifies with supernature, then the whole thing is about manifesting this supernature. So the instruments also have to change. So the instruments through which we express knowledge, through which we express love, through which we express joy, through which we express perfection, they also have to undergo a corresponding transmutation. So this is the background. So we can look at this process from the side of the creator, or we can look at this process from the side of the creature. When we look at it from the side of the creator, then well, nothing is ever really separated. So the divine descends in the sense, in the process of creation, there are several lines which come down from the divine, various aspects and powers, which ultimately we know as the divinities or gods and seers, etc. But essentially, there are four main powers which descend towards creation. One is knowledge or wisdom that goes. It's understood that without knowledge, nothing else, you know, it's at the background of everything. Then there is consciousness, which builds everything. There is existence, there is consciousness, which includes knowledge. And then there is force, the divine force. It has entered into the play. And then there is bliss. So bliss, when it descends into the play from the self-contained divine status above, when it enters into the play, it becomes love, because its purpose is to pull back creation back to its origin. And that's why one of the things that gives happiness to human beings deep inside is the power of love. It's intimately connected with bliss, intimately connected with beauty, intimately connected with harmony. So there are other powers also, but these are the main powers, and out of which love is the crowning power. Because if union is the goal, then what more than love? Because love seeks for union by its very nature. And because it seeks for union, it is the one, if activated, can very swiftly lead the rest of the nature toward the divine. That does not mean it is easy, because each part of the journey, each power in its restoration, in attempting to climb back, comes with its own baggage of difficulties. its own pitfalls and snares. For example, knowledge, one may assume that, you know, because one has the scriptural knowledge, therefore one has true knowledge. Now, it's a big pitfall, because knowledge in yoga is a knowledge by identity, knowledge of by direct experience, knowledge by realization, knowledge by intuition, revelation. That's what is knowledge. But there are several pitfalls. There could be partial experiences, partial realizations, and yet one may think that one has arrived. So this is the pitfall of knowledge. Power, of course, will can ascend toward the divine, but any time one may begin to develop the ego of the instrument and one may go completely astray from the journey. Similarly with love, the power of love, the more it begins to become active, it's an energy, a power which is the most difficult to handle. And that's why there has been a tendency to shun it, tendency to control it. And if we take the pure Shuddha Vedantin view, Advaitin's view, and of the like, generally love is subordinated, or at least it is not allowed to have its play. At most, the pure Vedantin, because there is no God to love, it's only the immutable Brahman, his love takes in him the form of compassion and kindness from a height as he grows in wisdom. But that's a different thing from love itself. So love, they have tried to control by the mind. People have tried to control by rules of society. But we all know that love finds its way. It escapes all kinds of control. It's a tremendous power. You can't just chain it. Mind cannot. Mind doesn't have the capacity to do it. And therefore, when we look at from the side of creature, then we have to understand that no power in this lower nature which is struggling. Each power is struggling. It cannot help the other just if it remains just where it is. So any of the power which gets liberated toward the divine, that can help the other. So it's very simple that if four of us are caught in the, or all of us are caught in the mud and the puddle, one of us has to find a way out. You know, that's what they say in aircraft, that if suddenly there is a loss of pressure and oxygen mask falls down, first you put the mask on yourself, because only if you save yourself can you save others. So there are different ways one can approach it. For example, in the Gita advises first to, even Sri Aurobindo, if you look at it, first to restore knowledge, because it's relatively easier. So once the knowledge is restored through a process of discernment, buddhi, vivek, and, you know, meditative practices, then it can become, this knowledge can help love to ennoble and uplift itself. This is one way. Or through karma yoga, when, you know, the will is taken up to the heights, it begins to adore the master of works, then this will can again help in uplifting love and knowledge. And that's why love is the crown, because generally very few can start straight with love. But at the same time, if love restores itself, then automatically knowledge and works, everything comes very swiftly, because you are one with the master, one with the Lord, and therefore you know exactly what his will is. You are one with the Lord, so you know wisdom, what is really going on in the mind of God, if you want to put it. So therefore, if one can catch love, and if one is oriented that way, and one is very fortunate, if I may say, or there is the background of the tapasya or sadhana in previous life, then it becomes very easy for this power to be released. But in any case, while we speak of tapasya of love, we have to understand that all have to go together. It cannot be just that love grows and becomes towards oneness with the divine, but knowledge is left in the background, because then love becomes blind and it can become an errant power even as its ascent. Similarly, there is, you know, love grows, but there is no service, seva, works for the divine, then again it becomes a maimed power, because it cannot effectuate itself. So we have to understand that while these are separate sections, in real yoga, real time yoga, they all have to go together. One cannot ignore one and focus that, okay, then I might as well first join with the divine through love, then we'll see the rest. It becomes very difficult if one does that. Yet for the sake of understanding, now we focus on love. So basically, tapasya means concentrated energy of spiritual endeavor. So first of all these powers, their origin is divine. But here they have been covered by the ignorant nature, covered by ignorance. And that we'll not go into why it happened, why the fall took place. But they are laboring here in a very deformed manner. And love is no exception. Love is covered by ignorance too. And therefore it assumes a very egoistic, selfish, selfish power, very deformed in human nature. So by love we normally mean I love you. And as long as there is I on one side and you on the other, there is no love. Poor love is actually crushed between I and you. So we have to release it from both the I and the you. And this is practical reasons. Mother says very beautifully that at its height, even love between human beings can give us a glimpse of the divine. It's true. Shobindo describes this in Savitri. When he talks about Savitri and Satyavan and the love that takes place between them. And he says that, you know, as when a soul draws near God. So that is experience. And it's very wonderful experience. You know, that's why people say it's better to love and lose than to never have loved at all. Because it's that power that gives us a glimpse of the divine. But it cannot stay for long. Partly because our nature is not equipped. It's very weak. And ego is very strong in nature. So it comes as a fleeting appearance. And then it goes into the background. And what happens after that is a story we all know very well. That power that saw the divine in the other person, suddenly it changes into its completely distorted, deformed form. He or she whom you loved, you begin to hate. He or she whom you felt you are ready to give everything, you want to appropriate that person only and exclusively for yourself. So you see, this I and you create a big problem in love. So she says that this one reason why it gets deformed. Second reason is that she says that because love is only one power of the divine. And in an integral yoga, all have to go together. If love goes cancelling knowledge, cancelling will and works, then it'll stumble or it'll lead to, you know, people become very sectarian about their God or they want to convert everybody. That is the state that happens because they don't have that kind of knowledge in the background which is needed. Because one of the common questions that arises that love is, as the mother says, it consists of two powers, two actions. One is attraction. The attraction is not necessarily physical attraction. In the animal level, it's physical attraction. But attraction can be work very subtly. It could be emotional, it could be intellectual, it could be affinities, 101, it could be spiritual. So there are various forms of attraction. And second, this attraction invariably creates in oneself the urge to give. So if the urge to give is not there, then we can say that it's one of the most deformed forms of love. Because the deformed form of love is to unite by devouring. So even in human life, we can see that there are people who claim to love, but they want to devour. They want to hold the person prisoner to themselves. They want exclusivity. So the moment we do that, then we are actually devouring, or they crush the person. The people who claim that they love and they will never let the person free to discover and assist the journey. That's what the difference between love between sadhaks should be, where you help each other, support each other in the upward journey. But very often it becomes a drag if one of the person is not ready. And Shobindo goes on to say in evening talks, because there is the conception of Shakti in Indian thought, and so he asked that what if the Shakti of the sadhak is not ready or not turned toward the divine. He says that the sadhana may even break. It may result in a failure. So having a shakti is no guarantee. So one has to understand. That's why it's safer and better to walk alone till our time comes. If the divine wants and the shakti comes, very fine. But still one should never always keep the divine in the center. So love without knowledge and all this is the second problem. So the deformation comes because of two reasons. One is ego. The more limited the vessel, the less will be the power to contain love. It will immediately turn into narrow forms, dark forms, possessiveness, suspiciousness, will to dominate, will to even devour, finish the other person, crush the other person, all in the name of love. And so this is the darkest form. And then as it ascends, then it becomes wider and wider and stronger and stronger. So to hold the power of love, there has to be two things, wideness and strength, especially in the lower vital parts. So if one is strong, one is quiet, and one is wide, then the energy of love can be held for some time. So that's why when people say that, well, I thought it was love, but it wasn't love, it's not really true. Actually, there was love. Love touched for a while, but we are not ready, because as he says in Savitri, a soul made ready through a thousand years is the supreme mold of the is ready for the supreme descent. So it takes a long time. Rare is the cup fit for love's nectar wine, as rare a cup that holds God's descent. So it's something very powerful. So if we are weak, love will not stay. If we are narrow, love will not stay. So that's one part we have to understand about it. So then, okay, but the energy is there. And how to really turn it toward the divine? First thing is that before we talk about turning to the divine, we have to purify it like any other energy. Before we can start with knowledge of the divine, we have to purify the knowledge. So with regard to knowledge, we learn to detach from appearances and the surfaces. As long as we are tied to surface and think that is knowledge, like many people draw conclusions based on outer things, and they are obviously very far from knowledge. They have not yet begun the journey of knowledge. So similarly, as long as we are attracted to surface appearances, to looks, to I'm not saying that good looks does not mean that there is no truth inside. Truth is everywhere. But if a person is attracted only to the surface things, is judging only on appearances, or feeling love based on appearances, or based on he or she is like me, and you know, based on all those outer things, qualifications and capacities, then actually it is not really a true awakening to love, because there is a surface play going on. So first thing about love is to detach oneself from surface appearances. The same thing which applies in yoga of works and applies in yoga of knowledge. You learn to detach from surface appearances. Meaning thereby, one has to see what is the origin of love and what is it in the other person that one loves. This is something very simple to understand. And one has to be very honest about it, give a very honest answer. So if it's just the appearance, then this love is not going to really stay for long unless it graduates into something deeper. But if it is something like some people are drawn towards either the mind of the person or toward the deeper aspiration, or they somewhere feel deep inside, it's classic in a disciple and a guru relationship. So love is not just between a man and a woman. Look at what happens between a disciple and a master. It doesn't matter how the master looks. I mean, of course, Sri Aurobindo, wonderful, even his looks also. As Amal Kiran said that, oh, he is someone who can be my master. Regality and beauty, everything. But there have been masters who have not been very good looking. I mean, Socrates is one example. He was quite ugly by human standards. And yet, look at how his disciples were ready to give their life for him. Plato, Critos, many other Aristotle, of course, disciple of Plato. So that's because love creates that sense of beauty. Love brings beauty. So when you love somebody, you see the person as the most beautiful person in the world. Whether the person is beautiful or not, that's a different thing. But love creates that glow. And when you are in love, you look beautiful. It's something that goes with love. So that is the kind of power that we are talking about. But first we have to extract it. So, you know, to extract it, come out of those appearances. There's a beautiful poem of Sri Aurobindo, Immortal Love, where he describes these different stages. He says, oh, Madonna, if I loved you only for your fair face and your, you know, your hair, then my love would very soon cease. It will not go very far. Then he says, if I loved you for your voice and your heart of ruth, for your beautiful speech, then time might pursue, might reach. But I have loved thee for thyself indeed. And myself, with myself I have snared. Time I exceed, space I exceed, and am for time prepared. So one has to look behind appearances actually. And that's why they say sometimes that give time. So why they give time? Because if it's just a surface attraction, it will wear off. So you slowly give time, and with time, you know, the deeper aspects come into existence. And that's one of the problems that people face. They say that we felt it's love, but the ego starts rubbing. Ego and love don't go together. So the beauty of love and the joy it gives is because momentarily love brings us out of the ego. And that is how nature has created family, then larger groups, nation, unit, and leading. The power of love is leading towards world unity, because it brings you out of the ego. And this is gives a aha feeling, because all stifling feeling, all sorrow, bitterness, unhappiness, depression, 101% is because of ego. So one has to diagnose. It's like diagnosis is egoitis. If you are unhappy, it's a state of ego. And this ego takes a very worse form when it blames other. Now when you blame others, obviously life becomes miserable for both. Neither to blame oneself or other, but to understand that ego is what is stifling me, what is stifling this feeling of love. So one has to come out of it. Then the joy of giving. So, but then the problem is that to give, let's say in human relationship, what does giving mean? So that's where knowledge comes in. So giving is not a blind giving into the desires. So giving doesn't mean that. Giving means, yes, one gives in all sincerity, but one gives to the divine in the person. That's where the correction has to come, because giving doesn't mean that one sacrifices at the altar of ignorance, because then love will become bound to the power of ignorance. And because love leads to union, it's cautioned that, well, one must be very careful whom one loves. So in ancient societies, and even to an extent, if you look into the history of the ashram life, love between the initiate and the non-initiate, it was not something very welcome. See, that's how traditions came, wherein love between people who are following the same path came in. Because this should not be followed as a strict rule, but generally it is true that if you love someone, your nature will begin to become like that. It's a power of union. So the power of love itself creates an interchange. So if the other person is on a different track and you have got a goal which is on a different track, there may be a very deep tussle and a struggle inside. So love leads to union, and therefore one should be very careful whom one loves. So there are those, I'm now talking of people on the path, because even in ordinary life, one has to know that if you love someone, your nature will begin to become like that person. And I know even very recently a very strange case where a girl, she was studying so well and, growing very good parents. And then this girl fell in love with a boy and, she developed very strange, almost violent, aggressive impulses, wanting to run away, do anything. And then this boy she was madly in love with was a murderer. He had actually killed his father. And he said in so many words, see, so what? I have killed my father and nobody can do anything to me. He was out on bail. But that love which she got entangled into was so vicious. And she felt helplessly caught in like a fly. And she wanted to escape, but she couldn't come out. And that man would obviously mistreat her. So ultimately I had to tell her that change the place, go away anywhere. Don't live in the same place in physical proximity. Give away your phone, because then you are in the grip of something very dark. So one should be very careful about whom we love. So, but in ordinary life, all these things apply. But somebody who wants to take the life of a higher life, which is our context, because we are talking of love in the context of yoga, then one should be very careful. Even here, there are two aspects. One is we, in terms of love, we are dealing with human beings and we are in love with human beings, but we are trying to ennoble this love to reach its highest possibility. And that is something Mother has described very beautifully, that then you must learn to love unselfishly. You have to learn to love without expectation. You have to learn to love without even the intrusion of desire element. Now desires will intervene time to time, but you should not bring up desire as the main motive power of love. So it means a very conscious sadhana, even in relationship, without expectation, with a very generous and wide heart, without possessiveness, without domination, without jealousy, without insecurities. So all these have to be completely, and human relation gives us a very good opportunity. That's one part is true. That if one wants to love the divine, directly shunning the stage of human love, then many times one does not realize that these things are coming up. When we look at some of the letters to Sri Aurobindo and the mother, people would feel jealous. They would feel jealous that, well, mother is giving more time to someone. mother had a smile for someone and not for me. They like to be possessive about mother. Even now, you know, this is my territory, because they have not gone through the purifying process. Even though one is in contact with the divine, but that spirit even to dominate, that I am the one who is going to, decide things on behalf of the mother. And there are so many stories and so many interesting incidents where it was a sobering experience when somebody spoke on behalf of the mother that, look here, mother has gone now, we can't disturb her, you have to come next day. And suddenly mother sent someone from the room, tell that person to come and see me. So the same person who is so close to the mother, I mean, someone means someone, Champaklalji, who is so close to the mother. And he says, no, mother is retired. And then suddenly he goes in and mother says, call that person. Now you can see in that story, it's Shobhadi's book, you can see in the story, even if you are very close to the divine, because there this can come in that I am somewhere an intermediary, and it can become a big problem. And even the greatest of sadhaks find very difficult to. So there are no intermediaries with regard to the divine and the human love. You should be very careful. Nobody connects us. Love is a power which doesn't go through intermediaries. Knowledge may go through a training ground. In serving the divine, we have a whole structure. But love is something which goes directly to the divine. So in human love, we have an opportunity to get rid of possessiveness, jealousy, domination, spirit of appropriation, all these insecurities, all this, one has to develop that faith and trust, not in the other person's love, but in your own, your own love. It may sound very paradoxical. So if one has prepared oneself this way, then slowly love gets rid of all these base elements. This is the pure, indispensable purification. And the sign that this has happened is happening is that there will be greater and greater joy in the heart. There is a state of felicity. Then all those swings of mood, states of depression, sadness, feeling that your dream world has crashed, all that goes away. Because now your love is becoming independent of the person. That's the beauty. You can continue to love even if the person has been very unkind to you. Even if the person hates you. Mother speaks of that. Still you continue to love. Continue to have goodwill. In spite of all the misunderstanding. Mother in fact uses that sentence. It's something very interesting. Because these are real life situations which come to, I think, every sadhak at some point who is trying to practice this yoga. And see what she says. What is the path to be followed? Since we have decided to reserve love in all its splendor for our personal relationship with the divine, we shall replace it in our relations with others. What should be a relation then? By a total, unwavering, constant and egoless kindness and goodwill that will not expect any reward or gratitude. It's one of the saddest experiences of life. I can say that when you see ingratitude in human nature, you say that somebody has done this and helped you and this, that, and suddenly in one moment, you are ready to censure or pass a judgment and throw the person away. These are facts of, unfortunate facts of human love, that ingratitude. Mother speaks about it. She speaks about that state of ingratitude which rises from the hell. Even if somebody has loved you, at one place somebody asked the mother, mother, shouldn't we respond with love to those who love, to those who hate us? She says, my child, first you should respond with love to those who love you. Hate you is one step further. So, but one has to, these are training sessions. Always I say that when these things happen, they are like practice equanimity, practice train, truer love, purer love. So she says that you will have a egoless kindness and goodwill that will not expect any reward or gratitude or even any recognition. It doesn't matter. You continue to love, continue to pray inside. But that does not mean you impose on the person. Oh, you know how much I love you. Then there is a vital play going on. But it's something very quiet. You are always the same. And then she says something very interesting. However others may treat you, you will never allow yourself to be carried away by any resentment. And in your unmixed love for the divine, you will leave him sole judge as to how he is to protect you. This, long back when I had read this, I said, protect means what? But the more you grow, you realize that when love turns into bitterness and hatred, it is such a dark ill will. And if you are on the path of yoga, it can completely, it can create illnesses, it can topple. The person would not even know, because he's just thrown a very dark energy. It can literally pierce. And if you are sensitive or open to the occult world, you can actually experience that, like a trident piercing and bleeding and trying to topple you. So she says that divine will protect you, because you become vulnerable suddenly. Love makes you also very vulnerable, because somebody whom you love, you don't defend yourself. You continue to love. So she says, you leave it, you will leave him, the divine sole judge, as to how he is to protect you and defend you against the misunderstanding and bad will of others. So this is the command for us. So people say that, well, then what about... See, these two things are going together. One is relation with others, and other is, what about our joy? Where do we get it? She says, you will await your joys and pleasures from the divine alone. In him alone will you seek and find help and support. So sometimes heartbreaks can help this way, because one realizes that he is the sole support. But many people take it like an exclusive. So there is an exclusive path of bhakti where then you turn away from the human field entirely. You cease to interact, you cease to love. But that's a path of bhakti where you have turned toward the divine and turned away from the human. Again, this is a stage. But in integral yoga of bhakti, you are turned inwardly to the divine for all the love. But you are sharing it with the world with an unflinching, unwavering goodwill, egoless kindness. So there is a difference. And even a universal love, friendship, all that will be there. He will comfort you in all your sorrows. But you will never be like, you are sharing your pain, sorrow, depression. And anyways, it should not be done. Even practically, it should not be done. Even with a psychiatrist, don't do it. Because, he'll give some kind of advice, counseling, which may be far from. Share it with the divine. He will comfort. He will turn every drop of tear into a pearl of strength. This is what I have seen. That if you have to cry, cry at the feet of the divine. He will turn it into strength. And if you cry before others, you are exposing your own vulnerabilities and you are likely to be misled by all kinds of advices. Guide you on the path, lift you up if you stumble, and if there are moments of failure and exhaustion, he will take you up in his strong arms of love and enfold you in his soothing sweetness. So this is the, in a sense, in these two passages, she has summarized. So all our love has to go to the divine. What does it mean when we use the word divine? Now, obviously, the Vedantic idea of an impersonal Brahman will not do here. It should be very, very clear that beyond the personal and the beyond the impersonal is the divine that Sri Aurobindo is, Panda Madhara, speaking of. They are not speaking of a personal deity that Vedantins sometimes admit. So, because Vedantins don't know how to deal with that power of love, so they say love for your Ishta Devta, love for your personal God. Eventually, he will lead you toward that impersonality, like Shiva. You love Shiva and he will liberate you. And then it's no more Shiva but nothingness, which was Shiva. So, this is not how really love is uplifted. This is okay in path of knowledge, this kind of love. But in an integral yoga, love is the entire human personality engaging with the divine, because every element of our personality is derived from the divine. So this is the logic. So everything that we experience humanly, every kind of relation, we can relate with the divine that way, because its truth lies there. So for example, mother and father. So divine is the one who is our source, the womb, who has given birth to us. So he is the mother. So spiritual motherhood. But what does the father do? Not just an ATM card father, but father who nourishes, protects, who puts beautiful things inside us. So divine is also the father. So he is the nurturer, just as mother is the nourisher. So both aspects. Father also protects you and even guides you. He is the first teacher in a way. So divine is the mother and the father. Then divine is the guru. So guru is someone who brings light into the darkness. So when we turn to the divine as guru, then he brings light into the darkness, removes the ignorance within us. Then the divine is also the master. So to the master we are disciples, so we have to obey him. And he is, we can become his slave. So he is the master who commands and we have to obey. So we become slave. It's the first steps of love for the divine can take this form. So there are people, here also egoism may come in. And they, if knowledge is not liberated, then they follow, then they become slave unthinkingly. And there are people who do much damage to the world because they think the language of the scripture they cannot understand. And they take it, this is the command of the divine. So they have not awakened to knowledge. And therefore they start brandishing a sword and killing in the name of God. So we have to understand that knowledge has to be liberated. Otherwise, especially in a master-slave relationship, it can be very dangerous. So there are relations of fear and slavery, primitive relation, but this should not continue long. It should change into genuine God love. Then there is the relationship of the divine as the leader, and we follow him. So we now again, when we follow, it should not be just imitating the outer aspects that, well, Sri Aurobindo shut himself in a room, therefore if I put myself in a room, he wore dhoti, and if I wear dhoti, if I eat once a day, therefore I am following Sri Aurobindo. Not at all. Sri Aurobindo has cautioned about it. So by following Sri Aurobindo means that we have to embody that seeking. He's a fire, which is, you know, as he says, his mind was like a fire assailing heaven. He is vast, he is compassionate, he is generous, he is benevolent. So that's what it means following the divine as the leader. He has gone before us, so he has shown us the way. So the divine is my leader. Then the divine is the hero warrior and whom he is battling. So then that takes the collective dimension of the work. Both actually, as a leader and the hero warrior. So we fight under his banner. So we have to, just as there is a collective work that the divine is engaged in, we also engage in the collective work as collaborator of the divine. And then of course the divine is everything, brother, sister, even a child. Child born to a desire. How does the divine become a child? Then you nurture him. You are protective towards him. You care for him. It's not like it doesn't matter whatever is happening. I don't care. Then you care, because how do you care for a child? So that way you care for the divine. And then finally he says, as the beloved and paramour. So beloved and paramour, many people wonder what it means. So beloved is somebody with whom you share your inmost thoughts and feelings. It is not to do with sexual union. This for people have this crazy idea that beloved means sexual union. No, that's an animal hangover which we are carrying. Beloved is someone, one may have a sexual relation with someone but not have the sense of beloved. If one has a beloved, one will be ready to share one's inmost thought without knowing that I will neither be judged nor I'll be condemned. The person will always accept me just as I am. And no human being can do this unless, of course, a yogi, of course, is a different thing, a true yogi. But otherwise, so the divine is the sole beloved. So to him we turn. There would be no secrets between the lover and the beloved. So that's the symbol of, you know, the gopis shredding their robe of virtue as well as vice. So before others we go as, you know, nice good people, very nice people wearing the robe of virtue. But before the divine we should be naked, utterly naked. We should not try to present a very good picture. We should be what we are inside without judging us and leave it to him. So beloved and then paramour. So paramour is the secret lover. Sri Aurobindo has not left any aspect. So we have wife, we have children, we have all the relationships. Let's take wife and paramour. So we are bound, he says, we are bound to the world through duty and obligation. So you have a wife, you are bound to her by duty. Certain promises you have made, whether on earth or heaven, doesn't matter. But you know, it's always good and noble to try to keep those promises. But be realistic in the promise, because humanly you can't fulfill all the promises. But nevertheless, so this is one part. But secretly you are loving the divine. He is your paramour. you are thinking of him. So you are thinking of him, you are feeling for him, you want to serve him. So this is how the journey of love, it may start with a feeling turned towards, an emotion turned towards the divine. But it changes into the yoga of knowledge. How it changes? Because you want to know more and more. As Champaklalji once told the mother that 20 years I have served you. After 20 years he says this. I have served you without knowing what you want. But I want to serve you knowing what you want of me. So see the difference between serving blindly and serving consciously. And this is someone, among the greatest of integral yoga yogis, if you put it, child of the mother, that is Champaklalji. So basically, it changes into yoga of knowledge, because somebody whom we serve, whom we love, we care about their likes, dislikes, what they prefer. We don't think about our preferences. When people think about their preferences, then it's obviously not love. Someone is willing to undergo any amount of hardship, or it's not hardship. Actually, when you do it in love, it's not hardship at all. So when you serve the divine, you don't think, oh my God, it's difficult. Like, let's say in the ashram setting, that you have to every day go to the department, you have to wake up at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and go for the work. You don't feel like that, because you're doing it for her. It's an act of love. So obviously, when we do like that, then slowly, you intuitively begin to grow into the knowledge of what the divine wants us to be. So yoga of love leads towards the yoga of knowledge in what the divine wants, not my own preferences, my own. That's why equanimity, all this is a package. And then the yoga of service also automatically springs from the heart of love. Because simply serving, let's say in an ashram setup, that 6 hours I am serving in a department. So department work is divine work. And all other work is my work. It doesn't work like that. It can start like that. But ultimately everything, mother goes on to say, even speaking, relationship, everything is yoga and can become yoga. All this can be the divine work. Let's say you are meeting someone. You can meet with full of goodwill. It's part of the divine work. Because you are helping. It's part of the divine love. Because you are helping the divine grow in the world, in each one. And if you simply say that, well, 6 hours I'll be in the department, then either I'll shut myself off, maybe read something. It's okay. Nothing wrong with that. But it's not completeness. Love has to universalize itself. So much so that wherever and one goes, one has to experience the divine everywhere. One has to see him or her in all beings. One has to take every activity as her service. Even a travel, coming to Greenville, staying, meeting people, everything becomes part of one interrupted service. So people often say that, why am I not able to remember the divine constantly? Well, because there is a division in the being. So division in the being is that this is my work, this is God's work. So this division must go. So slowly love begins to grow into every aspect of our life, every sphere. We don't have to cut off from anything or anywhere, but there is a vast, one becomes a vast channel of pure, undying, universal love. And the more we become like that, the more the heart becomes full of joy, full of gratitude, full of spirit of harmony. One of the signs that love is blossoming is that one loves harmony. It's a sign that love is blossoming. The only thing that can sadden, which the mother herself has said, is that, when you see in humanity, in gratitude, you see jealousy, you see love covered with very dark emotions, then, but that's a different thing. It's the sorrow of the divine, which experiences that this world has turned away from the divine. It's for that. This sorrow is nothing personal. It's not about yourself or somebody else. It's even about the person who is covered with this kind of anger, revolt, that how much his soul must be suffering. So it changes us completely from head to toe. So this is some of the aspects of the journey of love. There is so much more. As one grows into oneness with the divine, union with the divine, one begins to grow into the likeness of the divine. So one acts outwardly. It may look like a human action, but it's a divine nature which is acting through the individual. A word spoken, a thing done. I remember one particular instance of a sadhak who is very sincere. I'm aware of that. And one day something happened. Somebody said something to him and he gave him a slap. Now you imagine. Violence is not done. And he went to Champaklalji that day, and Champaklalji takes out a bundle of blessing packets and gives it to him and smiles. He knew everything. Now, you see, this is, you know, as for example, as the mother said that, you know, there is something called as a wrath, divine wrath which can awaken. Of course, these terms can be misused. But yes, when you see divine injustice being done to divine, when you see that the heart of men is surrounded with ingratitude, when you see haters of the divine, when you see revolts against the divine, then something in the heart can be inflamed. And a sword, as Amal Kiran has described that experience, like a sword of Kali, something was burning in the heart. And he says, what is it? And mother says, it's the sword of Kali. And it will continue burning and doing its work till the adverse force is destroyed. So this is how love can take so many aspects. Even the, as I said, wrathful, vindictive love, even that gets transformed. But into what? Not for anything personal. It gets changed into a divine wrath, which we see sometimes in the gods. When, you know, as mother said once, when a disciple who was speaking all kinds of things against her, then that night he had a very bad swollen knee, and he went to the mother and said, mother, is it you? She said, no, my child, I am full of compassion. But you know, the gods don't like it. So gods don't like it. When you do that, they have their own function in this creation, and they will act according to their own deep impulsion. So these are all shades of love that begin to grow, and so much more, so much so. So there is sadharma gati, becoming in the nature, growing in likeness of the divine. Samipya gati, you are feeling constant nearness of the divine. Even in utmost isolation, you feel the divine is near. Salokya gati, wherever you may be, even in hell, the divine will be with you, because you have the and the same status as the divine. So people begin to see the divine in you. You begin to feel that kind of closeness to the divine. So all these come through the magic of love. And at the end, in the closing, before we have questions, Shobindu says on magical lines, he says that there is nothing divine denied to the God lover, because he is the very self of the beloved. And he says that another, just before that, he also says that, well, there is so much more in love for the divine that no human tongue can utter. You can't put it into a straight jacket practice. The only practice, if you want to put it, is think of the divine. So the mind grows in love. After all, when we love somebody, we think about that person. We don't think of, then we don't have to even try detaching from family, detaching. It's automatic. You may be with family, but you are thinking of the divine. So you don't have to do something unnaturally, artificially, running away here and there, because you are with the divine. Like Meera, even though she is getting married, she is thinking of Krishna. So it can go to any extent. So thinking of the divine is the mind's turning in love toward the divine. Feeling love for the divine in all the relationships is the heart's turning to the divine with love. Wanting to see the divine inwardly, first outwardly, and also inwardly. So that's why keeping a picture, not just for remembrance. After all, when we love someone, we keep a photo of that person in the purse. I mean, young age people do it. Nevertheless, you like to see. You feel such a joy when you meet. That's how love is described. Shobindu reminds it in Essays on the Gita. When he talks about the supreme word of the Gita, Shri Krishna says, you know, Arjun, why I am revealing all this to you? I have not revealed this to anyone. Way back I had revealed to Vivaswan, and then to, you know, Ikshvaku, Manu and others. Now I am revealing to you. Why? He says, because you are taking delight in me. So Sri Aurobindo says, love in its essence is to take delight in the other person. It's not about saying I love you. You take joy in the other person, in the nearness of the person, in the company of the person, in the thoughts of the person, in serving the person, in taking care of the person. Because it gives delight, therefore there is love. So all this automatically develops in love, all the shades and aspects. And finally, of course, he says that, well, to such a God lover, knowledge, work, everything comes. And nothing is denied to the God lover. If a God lover promises something, the divine keeps the promise, takes care of the promise. It's not, I can say this with certainty, and I'll not reveal how and why. But the divine, he assures that it'll be done. And it doesn't matter what kind of promise, it may be ignorant. It may not be through you. It doesn't matter. You may have promised, divine will fulfill it. You pursue your path. That's not what, you know, we often think, I have made a promise, holy promise. What can I do? You don't have to worry. If your love for the divine is sincere, he will take care of every promise you have made. He will pay every debt that you have incurred. And he will do literally everything for you. So he says that for nothing is denied to the God lover, because he is the very self of the beloved. So if you ask the God lover that, you know, so all this Shravana Manan, you love to hear about the divine, you think about the divine, Darshan, you like to image the divine inside, Nididhyasan, meditate upon the divine. So if you ask a God lover, who is the one who is yourself? He'll say, I am no self except the divine. The divine is myself. He is my guarantee. There is nothing like me. There is only he. So that's how the divine lover will say. If you ask the divine himself, who is yourself? So he will say, the bhakta is myself. Because the bhakta takes delight in the divine. And therefore the divine also takes delight in him. That's how the word bhaj, bhakti, comes from the root bhaj. Bhaj is to take joy. From there comes bhukti and bhakti. So if you have started taking joy in the divine, you are done for all lives to come. If not, pray. And if love is born, then nothing else is required. Love is the great transcendence angel here. Love is man's lean on the absolute. Even though debased, disfigured by darker powers, it is still the power with which all can change. Chema.
Thank you so much. Well, we are opening to the question, and before anybody is ready to ask questions, please raise your hands. There is the heart in the bottom. You click on it and click on the raise hand if you have anything to ask or to reflect upon. What your talk made me think about, that the heart of the unknown is she, actually.
Yes. You had mentioned this even in Greenville, and I was very happy when you were reading. Yes. Heart of the unknown is she.
She can love the divine. She is the lover of the divine. And because of that, all our psychic beings who are her are in love with the divine. These are not like God's type of beings who do not feel that love because they think that they are the divine. And it is not the, even that, you know, transcendental divine who is actually withdrawn and indifferent to what is going on here, as it were. But his heart, she, the mother, is actually that very force of love.
A heart was felt in the spaces wide and bare, a burning love from white spiritual founts, and all the sorrow of the ignorant depths, suffering was lost in her immortal smile. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
So if anyone has questions, please switch on your mic and speak if you don't want to raise hand.
I'll ask a question here, Alokji. And perhaps this is connected to what Vladimir just said, but as you were speaking, what question that came up is there such a thing as not so much a soul to the divine, but soul to soul love, not soulmate?
Yes.
To soul. And when the mother speaks about, you know, the future, and there won't be, you know, families as we see it today, but it will be souls that are coming together, that what's coming, what's drawing them together is a love for I don't know if you could say like-minded souls or similar souls.
Common aspiration, souls with a common aspiration, group souls, yeah. So they are united in a common aspiration. Yeah, they are united in a common aspiration, but that's where, even there, if ego steps in, then it spoils the work. So one has to keep united in that common aspiration. That's how the Veda says, you know, Sangachvati, Sangmanasi. Vladimir will know the entire verse in the pure Sanskrit. So basically they come together and that's what gives joy. That's why these conferences and retreats. But if the ego comes in, then the same old story, even among sadhaks, walking together and soul to soul changes into ego to ego. That's why in the beginning, for a long time, the practice is that focus on the divine. And while with everybody have a goodwill and common love, that's the practice. In the beginning, that's the practice. Otherwise, even two people with the same aspiration can't live under the same roof because ego is too strong. So one has to keep on working. It's never enough. But yes, the soul love, psychic love. She even says that wherever in a story of human relation, the psychic being has entered, it's made it beautiful. That's true. Absolutely. And one loves to hear or know about such stories, even if they are very few. They transcend barriers of time, space, appearances. I know of some of these stories. Very amazing. Soul touching and soul uplifting in human love.
And is the nature of that love between souls different than the nature of the love between a soul and the divine, in that it seems to me the soul to soul is... there's this sweetness or this innocence that almost childlike sense that is experienced, which would be different, perhaps, the soul to the divine.
Yes, so the word that can best describe the relation of soul with soul is true friendship. Of course, love is different from friendship, but that's where it comes closest. But there are certain aspects of relationship with the divine that cannot enter in just a soul to soul love. Of course, there is an aspect where one serves. Both want to serve each other. Yeah. That's okay. So both want to serve, you know, take care of each other. So that aspect is there, no doubt. But the only caution that Mother gives is that if this becomes too satisfying, and I'm glad you, you know, brought that out, then it's like a short-circuiting. She has used the word short-circuiting, which is very interesting. Because if two soul-to-soul love can be sometimes extremely gratifying, it's so complete. It's, you know, the urge towards the larger movement, the universal movement of love can sometimes be missing. So that's why in Savitri, people often say that what happens when, you know, you reach that point. So Savitri says this very beautifully to Satyavan. She says, let us give joy to all, for joy is ours. So, you know, it should translate at the next level into not just shutting into each other soul to soul love, but spreading out into this whole creation, not just locked into each other, which is possible because very intense soul love between two human beings, which can be so joy giving that, you know, sometime the larger context, universal, the divine work going on in the creation, all that can be cut off. So if one can keep that in mind, then yes, there is perfect collaboration, supporting of each other. All this will happen in human soul-to-soul love. But in the divine love, it's not like you support the divine. The divine supports us. It's almost always a one-sided that way. So there is a shade of difference. Even in the experience, there is a shade of difference. The merger, the experience of merger with the divine is something too vast and too intense, too tremendous. And the merger of soul to soul, it can take place, it does take place with a limited vessel, has its own joy. In quality, it is the same, but in terms of its totality, it is not the same. So we can say that It's a limited edition of that which in totality one experiences with the divine. Quality is the same. A soul to soul merger can give the same quality of experience. Shobhinda himself confirms that in Savitri. So that's why it is such a tremendous thing and sought after. But one should not finish the story there. That's the big problem. So that's why in Ascent to Truth, we see that, you know, a lover and two lovers walk. They reach a point. After that, they don't want to go further. And they go the same point where the ascetic goes. But ascetic is cut off and the lover and beloved, they are together. They have reached very far. Then there is the sadhak and sadhaks, man and woman, or men and women who are going up. So there is something which remains missing. The larger universal sense, it can take place, but it's very, very rare.
By the way, Alok, this is the same idea is with Savitri and Satyavana when the Lord of Death offers her to disappear.
Yes.
Satyavana together, and she says no.
Yes. Infinite Satyavana and boundless Satyavana and infinite Savitri. That's true. Exactly. That's it. So that's where one has to, but these are special souls marked out for that. And I suppose Mother and Shivindu is a classic example of that kind of love story, which is not only soul to soul love, but soul divine love, and then the divine love spreading into the whole creation.
There are more questions here, Jan. Please unmute yourself and speak. You have to unmute yourself first. There is a button there below. If you see it on the screen audio, you click on it and then you will be unmuted. Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
So I have, and thank you, Alok, for your talk. I have a couple friends that they're not aspirants of any kind. One of these friends is an atheist. They're friends from my past. I enjoy their company. They're sweet people. I feel like they're aspiring in their own way, even though they don't have sort of like a North Star, so to speak. Is their company, like, is it not recommended to spend much time with non-aspirants, or can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, no. That's what she spoke of, the universal goodwill, kindness, understanding, benevolence. This has to be with everyone. And if somebody has grown a friend with you, even there are marriages where, you know, two people are living together. Now, what is important is that my love for that person or my friendship should be with the person. Now, I have to see, is it based on certain expectations, desire, that I have to keep on removing. That has to be with the divine. And if we just take that caution that this love that I experience is not turning into expectations and, you know, desire play and power play to dominate, which can happen even into sadhaks who are same aspirants. I have seen people who are co-aspirants and they crash land because the ego rubs against each other. So that's the only caution that has to be taken. But not that we have to shun the company of a thief, otherwise then we'll become exclusivist. But what is important is, because psychic being, which is the hub of this love for the divine, invariably loves truth, beauty and good. So when we are together or we have a good friend whose company we enjoy, we have to make sure that, you know, enjoying the company does not mean getting dragged down, because now you have a path. For somebody who doesn't have a path, it could be like, okay, let's go and have, for old time's sake, as they say, in my Air Force times, I used to face this. Come, for old time's sake, let's go and, you know, go for a party. Now, there one has to be careful because, paths are different. Love is there. Friendship is there. Goodwill is there. So truth, good and beauty, this also is one of the aspects. So wherever we feel that there is a play of falsehood entering, that part we will quietly keep aside. We are not going to shun the person, but obviously we are not going to be in holy company with everything that the person does, and that's understood. But yeah, there has to be rest is fine, there is no problem.
Thank you. Andreas wanted to say something, as so he was unmuting.
Yes.
Andreas. You can unmute yourself and speak if you are there. No? Chosen. Yeah, please. Please talk. Andreas, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, please, sir, you can speak.
What I would like to add is that the divine is so complex and so multidimensional that it is very difficult to express it in words. And same as love and all that, these terms. So that may mean different expressions for everybody. So I'm listening to these expressions of what is the divine, and I try to put it on a level of understanding where I can access the person who speaks. And the person is a manifestation of the divine. So his language is the divine. And how he wraps the divine into language is for me already a sign of the connection to the divine. And so I'm very hesitant to speak about the divine and about love and all that. There are very nice texts, and I like these texts. I have been to many places and have been reading texts. But no text really can really, really show the wholeness of the divine. It is just a special and particular expression of how the divine expresses itself in a given situation. But I have been became very modest and very, how to say, hesitant at least to speak about, to use words that are parts of our material experience, to just say what is this and what is that. I'm a quantum physicist, so I know that I am the co-creator of reality. And when I co-create reality, it is of course my person, expression of what is really going to be said. So this is, I'm very happy to listen to the people speaking about all these theories and the impressions, their own way, how they express the divine, because we are all divine beings and we are all expressing the divine through our personal prism. So that is what I would like to add, and I would like also to thank you for organizing the meetings and also for the speaker to really transmit what is his impression and what is his life. And then I try to integrate that into my situation, present situation in my life. So thank you very much, and yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Of course, the very idea of the talk, I may say, on the behalf of Alok and ourselves, is not really to tell you how things are, but to tune ourselves to something, some higher possibilities within our consciousness. We are tuning, and if this tuning is taking place, it is very good. If it doesn't, then maybe next time it will do. So we are preparing ourselves for this. In that sense, that is value.
So to me, since you mentioned it, to me, these talks have a meaning only if they are part of the divine service and an expression of the divine love. Otherwise, if they are intellectual gymnastics and trying to, you know, define the indefinable, then yes, they lose their purpose. So they are meant to either awaken in us some touch of that through whatever means, and like how I would look at it is that yes, if at this point of time somebody called myself is seated here, is asked to speak, it's part of the same divine manifestation through an instrument. And obviously the limitations of the instrument will be there. And yet at the same time, the instrumental personality cannot deny its joy of serving the divine. So that's how I look at it. In every talk, that well, it's part of the divine plan, divine service, and an expression of divine love, knowing fully well that even if the whole world were to write books and talk about the divine, still it will not be complete. That is for sure. We have a very nice, what we call as Doha, and I can read that. And Well, even if you were to turn the whole oceans into ink and all the trees into pen and the whole earth as paper, you cannot write the mystery and the joy and the totality of the divine. So that's very true. That's always the caveat which should always be there. And yet we all have to become in some way channels of the divine, because that's what this world is created for. So good, bad channel, that's up to the divine to decide. But that's what the whole purpose is to share the joy of love, aspiration and seeking all together.
Thank you so much. Jane, please unmute yourself.
I'm a little shy about this. Andreas and Alok have been talking about all the various theories and that kind of stuff, and presented it beautifully, but in a very detailed, complicated way. And I would like to share a poem I wrote back in the 1980s before I found Savitri, but I think it says for me in a very simple way. So here goes. Love is a red, red rose, and blue and green. All that I know and all that I've seen. Taught to expect it to come on a charger, always knowing it was something larger. My cat, my brother, even my hat. Love encompasses all of that. Learning together, you and me, that love is something that will set us free. Not to be earned, not to be taught, and yes, not even something to be fought. Love is, as I am, as you are, a red, red rose.
Thank you for sharing. Okay.
The rose of God, it comes to the mind.
Yeah.
Thank you, Malok, so much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for the joy. Yes, yes. Thank you.
Namaste.
Namaste.